His body would not relax, would not cease distracting him. But at last the full lethargy closed in. His ka loosed its 10,000 anchors to his flesh. Part of him insisted he was a fool for attempting this without the skills of a master, but he hadn't the time for the training a bowman's required. He had learned what he could during his absence from the old forest. Free of the flesh, yet connected by invisible bonds that would draw him back, if his luck held. He moved away carefully. He conformed to the rule of bodies exactly. He used the stairway, the doorway, and the sidewalks built by the guard. Maintained the pretense of flesh, and the flesh would be harder to forget. The world looked different. Each object had its unique aura. He found it difficult to concentrate on the grand task. He moved to the bounds of the Barrowland. He shuddered under the impact of thrumming old spells that kept the Dominator and several lesser minions bound. The power there. Carefully, he walked the boundary till he found the way that Bowman's had opened, still not fully healed. He stepped over the line. He drew the instant attention of every spirit, benign and malign, chained within the Barrowland. There were far more than he expected, far more than the wizard's map indicated. Those soldier symbols that surrounded the great barrow, they were not statues. They were men, soldiers of the White Rose, who had been set as spirit guards, perpetually standing between the world and the monster that would devour it. How driven must they have been, how dedicated to their cause. The path wound past the former resting places of Old Taken, outer circle, inner circle, twisting. Within the inner circle he saw the true forms of several lesser monsters that had served the Domination. The path stretched like a trail of pale silver mist. Behind him that mist became more dense, his passage strengthening the way. Ahead, stronger spells, and all those men who had gone into the earth to surround the Dominator, and beyond them the greater fear. The dragon thing that, on Bowman's map, lay coiled around the crypt in the heart of the great barrow. Spirits shrieked at him in Telkuri, in Uketeli, in languages he did not know, and tongues vaguely like some still current. One and all they cursed him. One and all he ignored them. There was a thing in a chamber beneath the greatest mound. He had to see if it lay as restless as he suspected. The dragon. Oh, by all the gods that never were, that dragon was real. Real, alive, of flesh, yet it sensed and saw him. The silver trail curved past its jaws, through the gap between teeth and tail. It beat at him with a palpable will. But he would not be stayed. No more guardians, just the crypt. And the monster man inside was constrained. He had survived the worst. The old devil should be sleeping. Hadn't the lady defeated him in his attempt to escape through Juniper? Hadn't she put him back down? It was a tomb like many around the world, perhaps a bit richer. The White Rose had laid her opponents down in style. There were no sarcophagi, though. There, that empty table was where the lady would have lain. The other boasted a sleeping man. A big man and handsome, but with the mark of the beast upon him, even in repose. A face full of hot hatred, of the anger of defeat. Ah, then, his suspicions were groundless. The monster slept indeed. The Dominator sat up and smiled. His smile was the most wicked Corby had ever seen. Then the undead extended a hand in welcome. Corby ran. Mocking laughter pursued him. Panic was an emotion entirely unfamiliar. Seldom had he experienced it. He could not control it. He was only vaguely aware of passing the dragon and the hate-filled spirits of White Rose soldiers. He barely sensed the Dominator's creatures beyond, all howling in delight. Even in his panic he clung to the misty trail. He made only one misstep, but that was sufficient. The storm broke over the Barrowland. It was the most furious in living memory. The lightning clashed with the ferocity of heavenly armies, hammers and spears and swords of fire smiting earth and sky. The downpour was incessant and impenetrable. One mighty bolt struck the barrowland. Earth and shrubbery flew 100 yards into the air. The earth staggered. The eternal guard scrambled to arms, terrified, sure the old evil had broken its chains. On the barrowland, 2 large shapes, one four-footed, one bipedal, formed in the afterglow of the lightning strike. In a moment, both raced along a twisting path, leaving no mark upon water or mud. They passed the bounds of the barrowland, fled toward the forest. No one saw them. When the guard reached the barrowland, carrying weapons and lanterns and fear like vast loads of lead, the storm had waned. The lightning had ceased its boisterous brawl. The rain had fallen off to normal. Colonel Sweet and his men spent hours roaming the bounds of the barrowland. No one found a thing. The Eternal Guard returned to its compound, cursing the gods and weather. On the second floor of Corby's house, Corby's body continued to breathe, one breath each 5 minutes. His heart barely turned over. He would be a long time dying without his spirit. Chapter 21. The Plane of Fear. I asked to see Darling and got an immediate audience. She expected me to come in raising hell about ill-advised military actions by outfits that could not afford losses. She expected lessons in the importance of maintaining cadres and forces in being. I surprised her by coming with neither. Here she was, primed to weather the worst, to get it over so she could get back to business, and I disappointed her. Instead, I took her the letters from Orr, which I had shared with no one yet. She expressed curiosity. I signed, "Read them." It took a while. The lieutenant ducked in and out, growing more impatient each time. She finished, looked at me. "Well," she signed. "That comes from the core of the documents I'm missing, along with a few other things. That story is what I've been hunting. Soulcatcher gave me to believe that the weapon we want is hidden inside this story." "It is not complete." "No, but does it not give you pause?" "You have no idea who the writer is?" "No, and no way to find out, short of looking him up, or her. Actually, I had a couple of suspicions, but each seemed more unlikely than the other." "These have come with swift regularity," Darling observed. "After all this time." That made me suspect she shared one of my suspicions, that all this time. "The couriers believe they were forwarded over a more spread period." "It is interesting, but not yet useful. We must await more." "It will not hurt to consider what it means. The end part of the last there. That is beyond me. I have to work on that. It may be critical, unless it is meant to baffle someone who intercepts the fragment." She shuffled out the last sheet, stared at it. A sudden light illuminated her face. "It is the finger speech, Croker," she signed. "The letters. See? The speaking hand as it forms the alphabet." I circled behind her. I saw it now, and felt abysmally stupid for having missed it. Once you saw that, it was easy to read, if you knew your sign. It said, "This may be the last communication, Croker. There is something I must do. The risks are grave. The chances hang against me, but I must go ahead. If you do not receive the final installment about Bowman's last days, you will have to come collect it. I will conceal 1 copy within the home of the wizard, as the story describes. You may find another in Orr. Ask for the blacksmith named Sand. Wish me luck. By now you must have found a place of safety. I would not bring you forth unless the fate of the world hinged upon it." There was no signature here, either. Darling and I stared at one another. I asked, "What do you think? What should I do?" "Wait. And if no further episodes are forthcoming, then you must go looking." "Yes. Fear. The world was marshaled against us. The Rust raid would have the Taken in a vengeful frenzy.
It may be the great hope, Croker.
The Barrowland, darling. Only the tower itself could be more dangerous.
Perhaps I should accompany you.
No. You will not be risked, not under any circumstances. The movement can survive the loss of one beat-up, worn-out old physician. It cannot without the White Rose. She hugged me hard, backed off, signed,
I am not the White Rose, Croker.
She is dead 4 centuries. I am Darling. Our enemies call you the White Rose. Our friends do. There is power in a name. I waved the letters. That is what this is about. One name. What you have been named, you must be.
I am Darling, she insisted.
To me, maybe. To Silent. To a few others. But to the world, you are the White Rose. The hope and the salvation. It occurred to me that a name was missing. The name Darling wore before she became a ward of the company. Always she had been Darling, because that was what Raven called her. Had he known her birth name? If so, it no longer mattered. She was safe. She was the last alive to know it, if even she remembered. The village where we found her, mauled by the Limper's troops, was not the sort that kept written records. Go, she signed. Study. Think. Be of good faith. Somewhere soon you will find the thread. Chapter 22. The Plain of Fear. The men who fled Rust with the cowardly Wind Whale eventually arrived. We learned that the Taken had escaped the plain, all in a rage, because but one carpet survived. Their offensive would be delayed till the carpets were replaced, and carpets are among the greatest and most costly magics. I suspect the Limper had to do a lot of explaining to the lady. I drafted One-Eye, Goblin, and Silent into an expanded project. I translated. They extracted proper names, assembled them in charts. My quarters became all but impenetrable, and barely livable while they were there, for Goblin and One-Eye had had a couple of tastes of life outside Darling's Null. They were at one another constantly, and I began having nightmares. One evening I posed a challenge, half as a result of no further courier arriving, half as busy work meant to stop Goblin and One-Eye from driving me mad. I said, I may have to leave the plane. Can you do something so I don't attract any special attention? They had their questions. I answered most honestly. They wanted to go too, as if a journey west was established fact. I said, No way are you going. 1,000 miles of this crap. I'd commit suicide before we got off the plane, or murder one of you, which I'm considering anyway. Goblin squeaked. He pretended mortal terror. One-Eye said, Get within 10 feet of me and I'll turn you into a lizard. I made a rude noise. You can barely turn food into shit. Goblin cackled. Chickens and cows do better. You can fertilize with theirs. You got no room to talk, runt, I snapped. Getting touchy in his old age, One-Eye observed. Must be rheumatiz. Got the rheumatiz, Croker. He'll wish his problem was rheumatism if he keeps on, Goblin promised. It's bad enough I have to put up with you, but you're at least predictable.
Predictable?
Like the seasons. They were off. I sped Silent a look of appeal. The son of a bitch ignored me. Next day, Goblin ambled in, wearing a smug smile. We figured something out, Croker, in case you do go wandering.
Like what?
We'll need your amulets. I had 2 that they had given me long ago. One was supposed to warn me of the proximity of the Taken. It worked quite well. The other, ostensibly, was protective, but it also let them locate me from a distance. Silent tracked it the time Catcher sent Raven and me to ambush Limper and Whisper in the Forest of Cloud, when Limper tried to go over to the Rebel. Long ago and far away. Memories of a younger Croker. We'll work up some modifications so you can't be located magically. Let me have them. Later we'll have to go outside to test them.
I eyed him narrowly.
He said, You'll have to come so we can test them by trying to find you.
Yeah? Sounds like a drummed-up excuse to get outside the know.
Maybe, he grinned.
Whatever, Darling liked the notion. Next evening, we headed up the creek, skirting old Father Tree.
He looks a little peaked, I said.
Caught the sidewash of a taken spell during the brouhaha, One Eye explained. I don't think he was pleased.
The old tree tinkled. I stopped, considered it. It had to be thousands of years old. Trees grow very slow on the plain. What stories it would tell.
Come on, Croaker, Goblin called. Old Father ain't talking.
He grinned his frog grin. They know me too well. Know when I see anything old, I wonder what it has seen. Damn them, anyhow. We left the watercourse 5 miles from the hole, quartered westward into desert where the coral was especially dense and dangerous. I guess there were 500 species in reefs so close they were almost impenetrable. The colors were riotous. Fingers, fronds, branches of coral soared 30 feet into the air. I remained eternally amazed that the wind does not topple them. In a small sandy place surrounded by coral, One Eye called a halt.
This is far enough. We'll be safe here.
I wondered. Our progress had been followed by mantas and the creatures that resemble buzzards. Never will I trust such beasts completely. Long, long ago, after the battle at Charm, the company crossed the plain en route to assignments in the east. I saw horrible things happen. I could not shake the memories. Goblin and One Eye played games, but also tended to business. They remind me of active children, always into something, just to be doing. I lay back and watched the clouds. Soon I fell asleep. Goblin wakened me. He returned my amulets.
We're going to play hide-and-seek, he said. We'll give you a head start. If we've done everything right, we won't be able to find you.
Now that's wonderful, I replied. Me alone out here, wandering around, lost. I was just carping. I could find the hole. As a nasty practical joke, I was tempted to head straight there. This was business, though. I set off to the southwest, toward the buttes. I crossed the westward trail and went into hiding among quiescent walking trees. Only after darkness fell did I give up waiting. I walked back to the hole, wondering what had become of my companions. I startled the sentry when I arrived.
Goblin and One Eye come in.
No, I thought they were with you.
They were.
Concerned, I went below, asked the lieutenant's advice.
Go find them, he told me.
How? He looked at me like I was a half-wit.
Leave your silly amulets, go outside the null, and wait.
Oh, okay. So I went back outside, walked up the creek, grumbling. My feet ached. I was not used to so much hiking. Good for me, I told myself. Had to be in shape if there was a trip to Ore in the cards. I reached the edge of the coral reefs.
One Eye! Goblin! You guys around?
No answer. I was not going on looking, though. The coral would kill me. I circled north, assuming they had moved away from the hole. Each few minutes I dropped to my knees, hoping to spot a menhir's silhouette. The menhirs would know what had become of them. Once I saw some flash and fury from the corner of my eye, and, without thinking, ran that way, thinking it was Goblin and One Eye squabbling. But a direct look revealed the distant rage of a change storm. I stopped immediately, belatedly remembering that only death hurries on the plain by night. I was lucky. Just steps onward, the sand became spongy, loose. I squatted, sniffed a handful. It held the smell of old death. I backed away carefully. Who knows what lay in waiting beneath that sand? Better plant somewhere and wait for the sun, I muttered. I was no longer certain of my position. I found some rocks that would break the wind, some brush for firewood, and pitched camp.
The fire was more to declare myself to beasts than to keep warm. The night was not cold. Fire-making was a symbolic statement out there. Once the flames rose, I found that the place had been used before. Smoke had blackened the rocks. Native humans, probably. They wander in small bands. We have little intercourse with them. They have no interest in the world's struggle. Will failed me sometime after the second hour. I fell asleep. The nightmare found me, and found me unshielded by amulets or null. She came. It had been years. Last time it was to report the final defeat of her husband in the affair at Juniper. A golden cloud, like dust motes dancing in a sunbeam. An all-over feeling of being awake while sleeping. Calmness and fear together. An inability to move. All the old symptoms. A beautiful woman formed in the cloud, a woman out of daydream. The sort you hope to meet someday, knowing there is no chance. I cannot say what she wore, if she wore anything. My universe consisted of her face and the terror its presence inspired. Her smile was not at all cold. Long ago, for some reason, she took an interest in me. I supposed she retained some residue of the old affection, as one does for a pet long dead. Physician. Breeze in the reeds beside the waters of eternity. The whisper of angels. But never could she make me forget the reality whence the voice sprang. Nor was she ever so gauche as to tempt me, either with promises or herself. That, perhaps, is one reason I think she felt a certain fondness. When she used me, she gave it to me straight going in. I could not respond. You are safe? Long ago, by your standard of time, I said I would remain in touch. I have been unable. You cut me off. I have been trying for weeks. The nightmares explained. What? I squeaked like goblin. Join me at Charm. Be my historian. As always, when she touched me, I was baffled. She seemed to consider me outside the struggle, while yet a part of it. On the stair of Tyr, on the eve of the most savage sorcerous struggle ever I witnessed, she came to promise me I would come to no harm. She seemed intrigued with my lesser role as company historian. Back when, she insisted I record events as they happened, without regard to pleasing anyone. I had done so within the limits of my prejudices. The heat in the crucible is rising, physician. Your white rose is crafty. Her attack behind the limper was a grand stroke, but insignificant on the broader canvas. Don't you agree? How could I argue? I did agree. As your spies have no doubt reported, 5 armies stand poised to cleanse the plain of fear. It is a strange and unpredictable land, but it will not withstand what is being marshaled. Again, I could not argue, for I believed her. I could but do what Darling so often spoke of, buy time. You may be surprised. Perhaps. Surprises have been calculated into my plans. Come out of that cold waste, Croker. Come to the tower. Become my historian. This was as near temptation as ever she had come. She spoke to a part of me I do not understand, a part almost willing to betray comrades of decades. If I went, there was so much I would know, so many answers illuminated, so many curiosities satisfied. You escaped us at Queen's Bridge. Heat climbed my neck. During our years on the run, the lady's forces had overtaken us several times. Queen's Bridge was the worst. 100 brothers had fallen there, and, to my shame, I left the annals behind, buried in the riverbank. 400 years' worth of company history, abandoned. There was just so much that could be carried away. The papers down in the hole were critical to our future. I took them instead of the annals. But I suffer frequent bouts of guilt. I must answer the shades of brethren who have gone before. Those annals are the Black Company. While they exist, the company lives. We escaped and escaped and will continue to escape. It is fated. She smiled, amused.
I have read your annals, Croker, new and old.
I began throwing wood onto the embers of my fire. I was not dreaming. You have them. Till that moment I had silenced guilt with promises to recover them.
They were found after the battle. They came to me. I was pleased. You are honest, as historians go.
Thank you. I try.
Come to Charm. There is a place for you in the tower. You can see the grand canvas from here.
I can't.
I cannot shield you there. If you stay, you must face what befalls your rebel friends. The Limper commands that campaign. I will not interfere. He is not what he was. You hurt him, and he had to be hurt more to be saved. He has not forgiven you that, Croker.
I know. How many times had she used my name? In all our contacts previously, over years, she had used it but once.
Don't let him take you.
A slight, twisted bit of humor rose from somewhere inside me. You are a failure, lady. She was taken aback. Fool that I am, I recorded my romances in the annals. You read them. You know I never characterized you as black. Not, I think, as I would characterize your husband. I suspect an unconsciously sensed truth lies beneath the silliness of those romances.
Indeed.
I don't think you are black. I think you're just trying. I think that for all the wickedness you've done, part of the child that was remains untainted. A spark remains, and you can't extinguish it. Unchallenged, I became more daring. I think you've selected me as a symbolic sop to that spark. I'm a reclamation project meant to satisfy a hidden streak of decency, the way my friend Raven reclaimed a child who became the White Rose. You read the annals. You know to what depths Raven sank once he concentrated all decency in one cup. Better, perhaps, that he had had none at all. Juniper might still exist. So might he.
Juniper was a boil, overdue for lancing. I am not come to be mocked, physician. I will not be made to look weak, even before an audience of one.
I started to protest.
For I know that this, too, will end up in your annals.
She knew me, but then she had had me before the eye.
Come to the tower, Croker. I demand no oath.
Lady,
even the Taken bind themselves with deadly oaths. You may remain free. Just do what you do. Heal and record the truth. What you would do anywhere. You have value, not to be wasted out there.
Now there was a sentiment with which I could agree wholeheartedly. I would take it back and rub some people's noses in it.
Say what?
She started to speak. I raised a warning hand. I had spoken to myself, not to her. Was that a footfall?
Yes.
Something big coming. Something moving slowly, wearily. She sensed it, too. An eye blink and she was gone, her departure sucking something from my mind, so that once more I was not certain I had not dreamed everything, for all that every word remained immutably inscribed on the stone of my mind. I shuffled brush onto my fire, backed into a crack behind the dagger that was the only weapon I'd had sense enough to bring. It came closer, then paused, then came on. My heartbeat increased. Something thrust into the firelight.
Toad killer dog, what the hell? Hey, what are you doing? Come on in out of the cold, boy.
The words tumbled out, bearing fear away.
Boy, will Tracker be glad to see you. What happened to you?
He came forward cautiously, looking twice as mangy as ever. He dropped onto his belly, rested his chin on four paws, closed one eye.
I don't have any food. I'm sort of lost myself.
You're damned lucky, know that? Making it this far. The plane is a bad place to be on your own. Right then, that old mongrel looked like he agreed. Body language, if you will. He had survived, but it had not been easy. I told him, Sun comes up, we'll head back. Goblin and One-Eye got lost. It's their own tough luck. After Toad-Killer Dog's arrival, I rested better. I guess the old alliance is imprinted on people, too. I was confident he would warn me if trouble beckoned. Come morning, we found the creek and headed for the hole. I stopped, as I often do, to approach Old Father Tree for a little one-sided conversation about what he had seen during his long sentinelship. The dog would not come anywhere near. Weird. But so what? Weird is the order of the day on the plain. I found One-Eye and Goblin snoring, sleeping in. They had returned to the hole only minutes after my departure in search of them. Bastards. I would redress the balance when the chance came. I drove them crazy by not mentioning my night out. "Did it work?" I demanded. Down the tunnel, Tracker was having a noisy reunion with his mutt. "Sort of," Goblin said. He was not enthusiastic. "Sort of? What's sort of? Does it work or doesn't it?"
"Well, what we got is a problem. Mainly, we can keep the Taken from locating you, from getting a fix on you, so to speak.
Obfuscation is a sure sign of trouble with this guy." "But? Butt me the butt, Goblin."
"If you go outside the know, there's no hiding the fact that you are out."
"Great. Real great. What good are you guys anyway?" "It's not that bad," One-Eye said. "You wouldn't attract attention unless they find out you're out from some other source. I mean, they wouldn't be watching for you, would they? No reason to. So it's just as good as if we got it to do everything we wanted." "Crap. You better start praying that next letter comes through, because if I go out and get my ass killed, guess who's going to haunt whom forever? Darling wouldn't send you out." "Bet. She'll go through 3 or 4 days of soul-searching, but she'll send me, because that last letter will give us the key." Sudden fear. Had the lady probed my mind?
"What's the matter, Croaker?"
I was saved a lie by Tracker's advent. He bounced in and pumped my hand like a mad fool. "Thank you, Croaker. Thanks for bringing him home." Out he went.
"What the hell was that?" Goblin asked.
"I brought his dog home."
"Weird."
One-Eye chortled. "The pot calling the kettle black."
"Yeah? Lizard snot. Want me to tell you about weird?"
"Stow it," I said. "If I get sent out of here, I want this stuff in perfect order. I just wish we had people who could read this junk."
"Maybe I can help."
Tracker was back. The big dumb lout. A devil with a sword, but probably unable to write his own name.
"How?"
"I could read some of that stuff. I know some old language. My father taught me." He grinned as if at a huge joke. He selected a piece written in Telkuri. He read it aloud. The ancient language rolled off his tongue naturally, as I had heard it spoken among the old Taken. Then he translated. It was a memo to a castle kitchen about a meal to be prepared for visiting notables. I went over it painstakingly. His translation was faultless. Better than I could do. A third of the words evaded me.
"Well, welcome to the team. I'll tell Darling."
I slipped out, exchanging a puzzled glance with One-Eye behind Tracker's back. Stranger and stranger. What was this man, besides weird? At first encounter, he reminded me of Raven and fit the role. When I came to think of him as big, slow, and clumsy, he fit that role. Was he a reflection of the image in his beholder? A good fighter, though, bless him. Worth 10 of anyone else we have.
Chapter 23 The Plain of Fear. It was the time of the monthly meeting, the big confab during which nothing gets done, during which all heads yammer of pet projects on which action cannot be taken. After 6 or 8 hours of which, Darling closes debate by telling us what to do. The usual charts were up. One showed where our agents believed the Taken to be. Another showed incursions reported by the Menhirs. Both showed a lot of white,
areas of plain unknown to us. A third chart showed the month's change storms, a pet project of the lieutenant's. He was looking for something. As always, most were along the periphery, but there was an unusually large number, and higher than normal percentage, in this chart's interior. Seasonal. A genuine shift. Who knew? We had not been watching long enough. The menhirs will not bother explaining such trivia. Darling took charge immediately. She signed, "The operation in Rust had the effect I hoped. Our agents have reported anti-imperial outbreaks almost everywhere. They have diverted some attention from us, but the armies of the Taken keep building. Whisper has become especially aggressive in her incursions. Imperial troops entered the plain almost every day, probing for a response and preparing their men for the plain's perils. Whisper's operations, as always, were very professional. Militarily, she is to be feared far more than the Limper. Limper is a loser. That is not his fault entirely, but the stigma has attached itself. Winner or loser, though, he is running the other side. Word came this morning that Whisper has established a garrison a day's march inside the boundary. She is erecting fortifications, daring our response. Her strategy was apparent. Establish a network of mutually supporting fortresses, build it slowly until it is spread out over the plain. She was dangerous, that woman, especially if she sold the idea to the Limper and got all the armies into the act. As a strategy, it goes back to the dawn of time, having been used again and again where regular armies face partisans in wild country. It is a patient strategy that depends on the will of the conqueror to persevere. It works where that will exists and fails where it does not. Here it will work. The enemy has 20-some years to root us out, and feels no need to hold the plane once done with us. Us. Let us say instead, Darling. The rest of us are nothing in the equation. If Darling falls, there is no rebellion. They are taking away time, Darling signed. We need decades. We have to do something. Here it comes, I thought. She had on that look. She was going to announce the result of much soul-searching. So I was not struck down with astonishment when she signed, "I am sending Croker to recover the rest of his correspondent's story." News of the letters had spread. Darling will gossip. Goblin and One Eye will accompany and support him. What? There ain't no way, Croker. I won't do it. Look at me. I'm a nothing guy. Who's going to notice me? One old guy wandering around. The world is full of them. But three guys? One of them black? One of them a runt with... Goblin and One Eye sped me milk-curdling looks. I snickered. My outburst put them in a tight place. Though they wanted to go no more than I wanted them along. They now dared not agree with me publicly. Worse, they had to agree with each other. Ego. But my point remained. Goblin and One Eye are known characters. For that matter, so am I. But as I pointed out, I'm not physically remarkable. Darling signed, "Danger will encourage their cooperation." I fled to my last citadel. The lady touched me on the desert that night I was out, Darling. She is watching for me. Darling thought a moment, signed back, "That changes nothing. We must have that last piece of story before the Taken close in." She was right about that, but... She signed, "You three will go. Be careful." Tracker followed the debate with Otto's help. He offered, "I'll go. I know the North, especially the Great Forest. That's where I got my name." Behind him, Toad Killer Dog yawned. "Croker?" Darling asked. I was not yet resigned to going, so I passed it back to her. "Up to you." "You could use a fighter," she signed. "Tell him you accept." I mumbled and muttered, faced Tracker. "She says you go." He looked pleased. As far as Darling was concerned, that was that. The thing was settled. They hastened down the agenda to a report from Corder suggesting Tanner was ripe for a raid like that on Rust. I fussed and fumed, and no one paid me any mind, except Goblin and One-Eye, who sent me looks saying I would rue my insults. No fooling around. We left 14 hours later, with everything arranged for us. Dragged out of bed soon after midnight, I quickly found myself topside, beside the coral, watching a small wind whale descend. A menhir yammered behind me, instructing me in the care and stroking of the wind whale ego. I ignored him. This had come on too swiftly. I was being shoved into the saddle before I'd made up my mind to go. I was living behind events. I had my weapons, my amulets, money, food, everything I should need. Likewise, Goblin and One-Eye, who had provided themselves with a supplementary arsenal of thaumaturgic gewgaws. The plan was to purchase a wagon and team after the wind whale dropped us behind enemy lines. All the junk they were bringing, I grumbled, we might need too. Tracker traveled light, though. Food, an array of weapons selected from what we had on hand, and his mutt. The wind whale rose. Night enveloped us. I felt lost. I hadn't gotten so much as a goodbye hug. The wind whale went up where the air was chill and thin. To the east, the south, and northwest, I spied the glimmer of change storms. They were becoming more common. I guess I was getting blasé about wind whale riding. Shivering, huddling into myself, ignoring Tracker, who was a positive chatterbox yammering about trivia, I fell asleep. I wakened to a shaking hand and Tracker's face inches from mine. "Wake up, Croaker," he kept saying. "Wake up. One-Eye says we got trouble." I rose, expecting to find Taken circling us. We were surrounded, but by 4 wind whales and a score of mantas. "Where did they come from?" "Showed up while you were sleeping." "What's the trouble?" Tracker pointed off what I guess you would call our starboard bow. "Change storm. Shaping." "Just popped out of nowhere," Goblin said, joining us, too nervous to remember he was mad at me. "Looks like a bad one, too, the rate it's growing." The change storm was no more than 400 yards in diameter now, but the pastel lightninged fury in its heart said it would grow swiftly and terribly. Its touch would be more than normally dramatic. Varicolored light painted faces and wind whales bizarrely. Our convoy shifted course. The wind whales are not as much affected as humans, but they prefer to dodge trouble where possible. It was clear, though, that fringes of the monster would brush us. Even as I recognized and thought about it, the storm's size increased. 600 yards in diameter. 800. Roiling, boiling color within what looked like black smoke. Serpents of silent lightning snapped and snarled soundlessly around one another. The bottom of the change storm touched ground. All those lightnings found their voices, and the storm expanded even more rapidly, hurling in another direction that growth which should have gone earthward. It was terrible with energy, this one. Change storms seldom came nearer than 8 miles to the hole. They are impressive enough from that distance, when you catch only a whiff that crackles in your hair and makes your nerves go frazzled. In olden times, when we still served the lady, I talked to veterans of Whisper's campaigns who told me of suffering through the storms. I never wholly credited their tales. I did so as the boundary of the storm gained on us. One of the mantas was caught. You could see through it, its bones white against sudden darkness. Then it changed. Everything changed. Rocks and trees became protean. Small things that followed and pestered us shifted form. There is a hypothesis which states that the strange species of the plain have appeared as a result of change storms. It has been proposed, too, that the change storms are responsible for the plain itself, that each gnaws a bit more off our normal world. The whales gave up trying to outrun the storm and plunged earthward below the curve of expanding storm.
getting down where the fall would be shorter if they changed into something unable to fly. Standard procedure for anyone caught in a change storm. Stay low and don't move. Whisper's veterans spoke of lizards growing to elephant size, of spiders becoming monstrous, of poisonous serpents sprouting wings, of intelligent creatures going mad and trying to murder everything about them. I was scared. Not too scared to observe, though. After the manta showed us its bones, it resumed its normal form, but grew, as did a second when the boundary overtook it. Did that mean a common tendency toward growth on a storm's outward pulse? The storm caught our wind whale, which was the slowest getting down. Young it was, but conscientious about its burden. The crackle in my hair peaked. I thought my nerves would betray me completely. A glance at Tracker convinced me we were going to have a major case of panic. Goblin or One-Eye, one, decided to be a hero and stay the storm. Might as well have ordered the sea to turn. The crash and roar of a major sorcery vanished in the rage of the storm. There was an instant of utter stillness when the boundary reached me, then a roar out of hell. The winds inside were ferocious. I thought of nothing but getting down and hanging on. Around me, gear was flying up, changing shape as it flew. Then I spied Goblin, and nearly threw up. Goblin, indeed. His head had swelled 10 times normal size. The rest of him looked inside out. Around him swarmed a horde of the parasites that live on a wind whale's back, some as big as pigeons. Tracker and Toad-Killer Dog were worse. The mutt had become something half as big as an elephant, fanged, possessed of the most evil eyes I've ever seen. He looked at me with a starved lust that chilled my soul. And Tracker had become something demonic, vaguely ape-like, yet certainly much more. Both looked like creatures from an artist's or sorcerer's nightmares. One Eye was the least changed. He swelled, but remained One Eye. Perhaps he is well-rooted in the world, being so damned old. Near as I can tell, he is pushing 150. The thing that was Toad-Killer Dog crept toward me, with teeth bared. The wind whale touched down. Impact sent everyone tumbling. The wind screamed around us. The strange lightning hammered earth and air. The landing area itself was in a protean mood. Rocks crawled. Trees changed shape. The animals of that part of the plain were out and gambling in revised forms, one-time prey turning upon predator. The horror show was illuminated by a shifting, sometimes ghastly light. Then the vacuum at the heart of the storm enveloped us. Everything froze in the form it had at the last instant. Nothing moved. Tracker and Toad-Killer Dog were down on the ground, thrown there after impact. One Eye and Goblin faced one another, in the first phase of letting their feud go beyond its customary gamesmanship. The other wind whales lay nearby, not visibly affected. A manta plunged out of the color above, crashed. That stasis lasted maybe 3 minutes. In the stillness, sanity returned. Then the change storm began to collapse. The devolution of the storm was slower than its growth, but saner, too. We suffered it for several hours, and then it was done, and our sole casualty was the one manta that had crashed. But damn, was it ever a shaking experience. Damn lucky, I told the others as we inventoried our possessions. Lucky we weren't all killed. No luck to it, Croaker, One Eye replied. The moment these monsters saw a storm coming, they headed for safe ground, a place where there would be nothing that could kill us, or them. Goblin nodded. They were doing a lot of agreeing lately, but we all recalled how close they had come to murder. I asked, "What did I look like? I didn't feel any change, except a sort of nervous turmoil, like being drunk, drugged, and half-crazy all at the same time." "Looked like Croaker to me," One Eye said, "only twice as ugly." "And dull," Goblin added.
You made the most inspiring speech about the glories the Black Company won during the campaign against Chu.
I laughed. Come on.
Really? You were just Croker. Maybe those amulets are good for something.
Tracker was going over his weaponry. Toadkiller Dog was napping near his feet. I pointed. One Eye signed. Didn't see. Goblin signed. He grew up and got claws. They did not seem concerned. I decided I should not be. After all, the whale lice were the nastiest thing after the mutt. The wind whales remained grounded, for the sun was rising. Their backs assumed the dun color of the earth, complete with sage-colored patches, and we waited for the night. The mantas nested down on the other four whales. None came near us. You get the feeling humans make them uncomfortable. Chapter 24 The Wide World.
They never tell me anything, but I should complain. Secrecy is our armor. Need to know, all that crap. In our outfit, it is the iron rule of survival. Our escort was not along just to help us break out of the plane of fear. They had their own mission. What I had not been told was that Whisper's headquarters was to be attacked. Whisper had no warning. Our companion wind whales dropped away slowly as the edge of the plane approached. Their mantas dropped with them. They caught favorable winds and pulled ahead. We climbed higher into the pure shivers and gasped for breaths. The mantas struck first. In twos and threes, they crossed the town at treetop level, loosing their bolts into Whisper's quarters. Rock and timbers flew like the dust around stamping hooves. Fires broke out. The monsters of the upper air rolled in behind as soldiers and civilians hit the streets. They unleashed bolts of their own. But the real horror was their tentacles. The wind whales gorged upon men and animals. They ripped houses and fortifications apart. They yanked trees out by their roots. And they pounded away at Whisper with their bolts. The mantas, meantime, rose 1,000 feet and plunged again in their pairs and threes, this time to strike at Whisper as she responded. Her response, though it did set a broad patch of one wind whale's flank gruesomely aglow, pinpointed her for the mantas. They slapped her around good, though she did bring one down. We passed over, the flash and fires illuminating our monster's belly. If anyone in the crucible spotted us, I doubt they guessed we were going on. Goblin and One Eye detected no interest in anything but survival. It continued as we lost sight of the town. Goblin said they had Whisper on the run, too busy saving her own ass to help her men.
Glad they never pulled any of this crap on us, I said.
It's a one-shot, Goblin countered. Next time they'll be ready.
I'd have thought they'd be now, because of rust.
Maybe Whisper has an ego problem.
No maybe about it. I had dealt with her. It was her weak spot. She would have made no preparations because she believed we feared her too much. She was, after all, the most brilliant of the Taken.
Our mighty steed plowed the night, back brushing the stars, body gurgling, chugging, humming. I began to feel optimistic. At dawn, we dropped into a canyon in the Windy Country, another big desert. Unlike the plain, though, it is normal. A big emptiness where the wind blows all the time. We ate and slept. When night fell, we resumed our journey. We left the desert south of Lourdes, turned north over the Forest of Cloud, avoiding settlements. Beyond the Forest of Cloud, though, the wind whale descended, and we were on our own. I wish we could have gone the whole way airborne, but that was as far as Darling and the wind whales were willing to risk. Beyond lay heavily inhabited country. We could not hope to come down and pass the daylight hours unseen, so from there on we would travel the old-fashioned way. The Free City of Roses was about 15 miles away. Roses has been free throughout history, a republican plutocracy. Even the lady did not see fit to buck tradition.
One huge battle took place nearby during the northern campaigns, but the site was of rebel choosing, not ours. We lost. For several months, Roses lost its independence. Then the Lady's victory at Charm ended rebel dominion. All in all, though unaligned, Roses is a friend of the Lady. Crafty bitch. We hiked. Our journey was an all-day affair. Neither I, nor Goblin, nor One-Eye was in good shape. Too much loafing, getting too old. This isn't smart, I said, as we approached a gate in Rose's pale red walls, toward sunset. We've all been here before. You two should be well remembered, what with having robbed half the citizens.
Robbed?
One-Eye protested.
Who robbed?
Both of you clowns. Selling those damned guaranteed-to-work amulets when we were after Raker. Raker was a one-time rebel general. He had beaten the crap out of the Limper farther north. Then the company, with a little help from Soulcatcher, had sucked him into a trap in Roses. Both Goblin and One-Eye had preyed on the populace. One-Eye was an old hand at that. Back when we were in the south, beyond the Sea of Torments, he had been involved in every shady scheme he could find. Most of his ill-gotten gains he soon lost at cards. He is the world's worst card player. You'd think by 150 he would learn to count them. The plan was for us to lay up at some sleazy, no-questions-asked inn. Tracker and I would go out next day and buy a wagon and team. Then we would head out the way we had come, pick up what gear we had been unable to carry, and circle the city by heading north. That was the plan. Goblin and One-Eye did not stick to it. Rule number one for a soldier, stick to the mission. The mission is paramount. For Goblin and One-Eye, all rules are made to be broken. When Tracker and I returned, with Toadkiller Dog loping along behind, it was late afternoon. We parked. Tracker stood by while I went upstairs. No Goblin, no One-Eye. The proprietor told me they had left soon after I had, chattering about finding some women. My fault. I was in charge. I should have foreseen it. It had been a long, long, long time. I paid for another 2 nights, just in case. Then I turned animals and wagon over to the hostler's boy, had supper with a silent Tracker, and retreated to our room with several quarts of beer. We shared it, Tracker, me, and Toadkiller Dog.
"You going looking for them?" Tracker asked.
"No. If they haven't come back in 2 days, or pulled the roof in on us, we'll go ahead without them. I don't want to be seen around them. There'll be people here who remember them." We got pleasantly buzzed. Toadkiller Dog seemed capable of drinking people under the table. Loved his beer, that dog. Actually got up and moved around when he didn't have to. Next morning, no Goblin. No One-Eye. But plenty of rumors. We entered the common room late, after the morning crowd and before the noontime rush. The hostler had no other ears to bend.
"You guys hear about the ruckus over in the East End last night?"
I groaned before he got to the meat of it. I knew.
"Yeah, regular Wahoo war party. Fires, sorcery, lynch mob. Excitement like this old town ain't seen since that time they were after that General What's-It the Lady wanted."
After he went to pester another customer, I told Tracker, "We'd better get out now."
"What about Goblin and One-Eye?"
"They can take care of themselves. If they got themselves lynched, tough. I'm not going poking around and getting myself a stretched neck, too. If they got away, they know the plan. They can catch up."
"I thought the Black Company didn't leave its dead behind."
"We don't." I said it, but maintained my determination to let the wizards stew in what juice they had concocted. I did not doubt that they had survived. They had been in trouble before, 1,000 times. A good hike might have a salutary effect on their feel for mission discipline. Meal finished, I informed the proprietor that Tracker and I were departing, but that our companions would keep the room.
Then I led a protesting tracker to the wagon, put him aboard, and when the boy had the hitch ready, headed for the western gate. It was the long way, through tortuous streets, over a dozen arched bridges spanning canals, but it led away from yesterday's silliness. As we went, I told Tracker how we had tricked Raker into a noose. He appreciated it. That was the company's trademark, I concluded. Get the enemy to do something stupid. We were the best when it came to fighting, but we only fought when nothing else worked.
But you were paid to fight.
Things were black and white to Tracker. Sometimes I thought he had spent too much time in the woods. We were paid for results. If we could do the job without fighting, all the better. What you do is, you study your enemy. Find a weakness, then work on it. Darling is good at that. Though working on the Taken is easier than you would think. They're all vulnerable through their egos.
What about the lady?
I couldn't say. She doesn't seem to have a handle. A touch of vanity, but I don't see how to get hold of it. Maybe through her drive to dominate. By getting her to overextend herself. I don't know. She's cautious and smart. Like when she sucked the rebel in at Charm. Killed 3 birds with 1 stone. Not only did she eliminate the rebel, she exposed the unreliable among the Taken and squashed the Dominator's attempt to use them to get free.
What about him?
He isn't a problem. He's probably more vulnerable than the lady, though. He don't seem to think. He's like a bull. So damned strong, that's all he needs. Oh, a little guile, like at Juniper, but mostly just the hammer strokes type.
Tracker nodded thoughtfully. Could be something to what you say.
Chapter 25 The Barrowland. Corby miscalculated. He forgot that others beside Case were interested in his fate. When he failed to show for work various places, people came looking for him. They pounded on doors, tapped on windows, and got no response. One tried the door. It was locked. Now there was genuine concern. Some argued for kicking a break-in up the chain of command. Others for moving now. The latter view prevailed. They broke the lock and spread out inside. They found a place obsessive in its neatness, Spartan in its furnishings. The first man upstairs yelped, "Here he is! He's had a stroke or something!" The pack crowded into the little upstairs room. Corby sat at a table on which lay an oilskin packet and a book.
"A book," someone said. "He was weirder than we thought."
A man touched Corby's throat, felt a feeble pulse, noted that Corby was taking shallow breaths spaced far more widely than those of a man sleeping.
"Guess he did have a stroke, like he was sitting here reading and it hit him."
"Had an uncle went like that," someone said, "when I was a kid, telling us a story and just went white and keeled over."
"He's still alive. We better do something. Maybe he'll be all right."
A big rush downstairs, men tumbling over men. Case heard when the group rushed into headquarters. He was on duty. The news put him in a quandary. He had promised Corby, but he could not run off. Sweet's personal interest got the news bucked up the ladder fast. The colonel came out of his office. He noted Case looking stricken.
"You heard. Come along, let's have a look. You men, find the barber. Find the..."